Okay, well, we'll get started. It is a bit of a light crowd. Appreciate that it's right after lunch, day three of three of the conference in the afternoon. A lot of people have left to catch a plane, so I just want to answer one question up front, and that's why would you want to spend this hour with, a couple of guys that you probably have never met before, never heard of before, working for a company you may not have heard of either. Talk about agile. So there's a few. Just jump over here. The first one is that we're going to show you some pictures of some cool yellow iron, the trucks and diggers that you grew up as a child playing with in a sandbox, and we hope to draw some memories out for you. Second, turns out there's businesses who make much bigger versions of these pieces of machinery, and they rely on software and technology to run those businesses. Ali and I are a couple of guys who've managed to make a living working for one of those companies, doing what we love related to software development, and sharing our love for those oversized toys with a company of a whole bunch of other people like that. And then our company, not like many of the ones you may come from, want to get more value delivered out of their software development professionals. And that's the kind of the key topic of the session is sharing the journey that we've gone through and the lessons that we've learned on implementing Agile in our organization. My name is Mark Beeson. I'm the IT director for Finning Canada. We're the Caterpillar dealer in Western Canada. As the IT director, I have overall responsibility for all IT and applications development in our organization. We've got over 5,000 users in a fairly diverse operating environment in over 50 locations. I grew up as a business analyst by trade, kind of came through the application side of our IT organization, and now I'm looking after everything. I'm joined by Ali Halat. He's the manager of solutions delivery at Finning Canada. He has responsibility for a cross-functional team of over 20 IT professionals, so BAs, developers, QA, user experience, and so on, who develop custom web, BI, and getting into mobile solutions for our organization. Today we're going to first, I'm going to give you an overview of our organization, just to give you a level set of how Agile is used and what sort of unique circumstances we need to make sure that we tailored our approach to in our journey to adopting Agile. I'm going to educate you a little bit about the heavy equipment dealership business that we're a part of, and just a quick level set on our IT landscape. I'm going to turn it over to Ali, and he's going to walk you through the journey that we've gone through over the past 2 years in embedding Agile in our organization. And then we'll leave time at the end for any questions that anybody might have. Finning Canada is a division of Finning International, so our parent company, traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange under FTT. Is the world's largest Caterpillar dealer. We've got operations across the globe. As you'll see, but the visuals there, we're in Western Canada, in Alberta, British Columbia, Yukon, and Northwest Territories, and part of Nunavut. And we operate out of four countries in South America: Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, and Bolivia, and then all of the United Kingdom and Ireland. As a Caterpillar dealer, we have exclusive rights to distribute the Caterpillar product in the territories in which we operate, and we're very fortunate to operate in some of the most resource-rich territories in the world. Founded in 1933 by a gentleman by the name of Earl B. Finning out of Vancouver. He was an American that came up and saw an opportunity to get in the forestry business back then. We serve a broad range of industries, pretty much anything that extracts resources out of the earth to supply, all of the manufacturing operations of the world, and construction We operate in all of those. Our market cap at the end of 2011, we haven't announced our 2012 results yet, was $3.8 billion, and our revenues in 2011 were $5.9 billion. We've got over 13,500 employees worldwide.
It's not your mom and pop dealership.
Yeah. Finning Canada, we're fortunate to work in one of the best heavy equipment territories in the world. Particularly because of the oil sands operations up in northern Alberta. Our head office is in Edmonton, Alberta. That's where Ali and I are both from and live. We serve the same industries, you know, captured on the previous slide. And we represent just about half of Finning International's overall revenue. So we're the big kid in the family. And just over 5,100 employees. And the growth has been pretty significant over the last 5 to 10 years. And just to highlight that, up in the oil sands region around Fort McMurray, highlighted on the map there, we have over 1,000 employees working in that one local region alone. And that was only at 375 back in 2006. So it's grown quite rapidly. Just a couple of other highlights of our operation. We have a large remanufacturing facility in Edmonton called OEM. They remanufacture major components for many of the machines that we sell and support. And it's a world-class remanufacturing capability that we have out of that operation. We have a major parts distribution center supplying the majority of our network in Western Canada, also based in Edmonton. And in out of Red Deer, we have a very large world-class equipment rebuild and new equipment preparation facility. We are a heavy equipment dealer, and we focus primarily on the Caterpillar product line. Caterpillar products represent 95% of our products. As a dealer, we both rent, and then we provide product support. That's selling just parts to customers to repair their machines, or we provide service and parts as well. And Caterpillar's product lines span across many, many different types of equipment, but also a power systems business, which focuses on different types of engines that go into on-highway trucks to genset applications, backup power for data centers, etc. We have a seed, grow, and harvest business model, and what that means is we offer a product in the marketplace with a compelling enough offering to get equipment and machines out into the territory. We have over 50,000 pieces of Caterpillar iron working in our Western Canada region alone, and then the grow part is being very aggressive from a market share standpoint to get more and more and more. And what that allows us to do is take the money we get out of our business and invest it into our product support infrastructure to allow us to reap the benefits on the harvest side, which is all of the product support business that comes with the life of a machine. In terms of the initial or the total value of us getting a machine into our territory, if you look at a 400-ton mining truck, I'll show you a picture of that in a minute, which is one of it's the largest mining truck operating in many mining operations worldwide. That machine sells for about $6 to $7 million. Over the life of that machine, operating in a 24/7 environment in very harsh conditions, like the territories we operate out of, we'll see 6 to 7 times that much more revenue in terms of the product support business. We have a broad product line, so there's a picture on the screen of a genset. But we also sell everything from one of these compact skid steer loaders that just barely fits an operator inside the cab. There's a more traditional track type tractor or bulldozer, as commonly referred to. That's one of the 400-ton mining trucks. So that's a Chevy Blazer sitting beside it, so a mid-size SUV. This is a bit dated picture, but the cab of, or the roof of the truck just comes up to the axle of that machine. And then last year, Caterpillar acquired another global mining company called Bucyrus. And with that, we now have even bigger machines. That the smaller truck on the left-hand side of that picture is the one I previously showed you, and to the right of it is a shovel that scoops up product off of the mine site and loads it into the bucket in 2 to 3 passes. So you can appreciate the size of the investment that we need to make in our facilities, in our trucks, and tools that are going out and servicing these machines in these very harsh environments. We've got safety as a core value, and unwavering focus on customers is key, because if you look at the smaller side of our business, a customer that maybe has one or two machines as an owner-operator, they're focused on making their livelihood off of that investment that they've made, all the way up to very large holding companies that operate very large fleets of equipment in mining other operations. Our advantage really comes in the form of a premium product line like Caterpillar and the investment that we've made and the broad product support infrastructure capabilities that we have. Just a little bit about our IT landscape. There's a broad mix of scenarios that we need to support in the infrastructure and applications that we put out. We've got corporate offices, primarily in the Edmonton region, but then 50 branch locations spread out across the entire Western Canadian territory that I showed you earlier. And that's distributed between very urban locations to the most remote locations where you wouldn't find anybody living had there not been a mine there. The most remote location would be Ekati Northwest Territories, where we operate on BHP's Diamond Mine site as the exclusive supplier and product support provider for their equipment. We've got over 1,000 fleet vehicles. 400 of those are fully equipped service trucks, so you'll see very large 3-ton trucks driving on the road with a fully functioning crane and loaded with tools to work on those very large machines out in the field, down to smaller half-ton pickups. Got a diverse mix of user personas that we need to support: office workers, field workers, resident workers who are working out of their home and/or their fleet vehicle. We've outsourced the majority of our data center server and network operations to TELUS, a large telco and IT services provider in Canada. And we use TELUS also for all of our mobility services. And then at the bottom there is a short list of some of the standards that we have established in our organization. On the application side, drawing your eye to the illustration in the middle, we have a core set of enterprise applications, an ERP and CRM application from Lawson, which we implemented a couple years ago, Infor, Infinium for our HR and payroll system, and Kronos for time entry of all of our hourly workers. And then we've got a set of other third-party packages that complement and connect to that core at the division level. So enterprise would mean it's intended to be global and consistent across all the regions rolling up to, or all the divisions rolling up to Finning International. And then the division level stuff is specific to Finning Canada that we support. And then in addition to that, we've got many interfaces. A huge percentage of them are with Caterpillar as our manufacturer, and all of the processes we have automated between the dealer and the manufacturer. We have a set of business intelligence tools and capabilities, and then on the right-hand side, custom web applications that we augment to satisfy a number of different requirements. And typically, so this is kind of a principle that we have around where we do custom development, and frame what Ali's going to talk about for the examples of where we've applied Agile and built software. So we generally build what we can't buy. So either it's a Something really specific to our business that there's no commercial off-the-shelf software available. Certainly on the online marketing and e-business side, there's lots of examples of that for our business. There just isn't a suitable buy solution available. It might be a business problem where we just have a need for a very quick turnaround and we can't wait to go through the feasibility assessment and proper analysis of what we need. So the solution isn't known or the problem isn't known well enough to go through that exercise and we need to do something quick. We'll also approach it in terms of a bridging strategy. So go through the process of doing custom development in an iterative fashion so that we can better understand what problem we need to solve. And that might either lead to deciding to formalize on the path long term to do custom development or switch to a more commercially available product. Idea is not fully baked. We do a lot of focus on applications that help with productivity gains in our organization or enhancing communications and collaboration. So I'll turn it over to Ali now, and he'll walk you through our last 2 years and the journey that we've undertaken with Agile.
Great. Thank you, Mark. So now that you guys got a little bit of an appreciation for our organization, the complexity, and what we're trying to support in terms of the capabilities that we've developed over this last 2 years here, I'm going to walk you through our journey here. And before I do so, I want to kind of step back and show you a little bit, share a little bit of where we were. So going into this, we had mixed success in our custom development space. A lot of that success came from smaller teams, dedicated teams, individuals that just knew how to get it done. What we lacked at that time was a formula that we could repeat that success on a larger team. With that said, we still weren't able to get it done quick enough. In some instances, we didn't deliver the value that our business needed in the time they needed it, and it was a little bit difficult for us in the position we're at. We did want to deliver. We understood their problem. We didn't have the capabilities or the means to come together and deliver that value soon enough for them to realize the benefits. We attempted Agile in the past to kind of remediate some of that in different forms. I don't want to say that we went out there and we understood Agile well enough. At that point, we picked bits and pieces of what we read, what we understood from our colleagues, and we tried to adapt some of those practices to our delivery. And I got to tell you that at that point, it worked in some instances, but in terms of an overall capability, we just didn't get it. We didn't. I don't think we really understood what it meant to be agile at that point, or what it means to be agile. With that, I want to make sure that when we leave today, kind of give you the opportunity to learn a little bit about what we did, how we got there, some of the success factors and lessons learned along the way in achieving this capability. As well as show you some samples of our applications that we developed over the last couple of years here. So, prior to jumping in and talking about our journey as well, I want to set the stage is that prior to Agile or our adoption of Agile, we had mixed success. Sorry, I want to say mixed success. We ran all of our IT projects using a matrix organization model where we selected team members on a project for a project based on, you know, their from single discipline teams where we had project managers, BAs, developers. You'd have to hunt and gather trying to figure out who were the right individuals to select to a team. In many cases, you didn't have a choice. It was who was coming off the bench or who was on the bench or coming off of a project, and doesn't necessarily mean that you got the right people to do the job, but you have a group of people that can put together, and then hopefully they can find their way to the finish line. What we failed to understand is that there's a learning curve, a large learning curve. I don't think we failed to understand it. We had to go through this every time we formed a new team. Is we had to go through the four stages of team formation, whereas there's your forming, storming, norming, performing, and a lot of the cases we struggled to get into the norming phase, let alone in some instances, we never even got out of the storming phase. So it was really difficult to get the buy-in from individuals and get to a performing state where we had repeatable formulas, we had processes and practices in place, and we had a framework to start, you know, development from inception all the way to delivery to the business and repeat that in an iterative fashion. We made, at that point, you know, with our experience in the project management approach at that time, and everything was waterfall. We had no other, we never adopted any other practice out there or methodology. It was strictly driven off of agile, waterfall practices. So with that, we had to step back and really assess where we're at. We made a conscious decision to create a single discipline team where we had all the capabilities, all the roles necessary to deliver a product from through the various stages of development. It was a little bit difficult up front because you have to break the barriers that are out there in our organization where we did have these single discipline teams and we're telling them we want to do it a little bit different. So we had to get the, not necessarily buy-in, but we had to change our approach with individuals and just detach ourselves from our PM project management discipline, our standard demand process, to give ourselves the opportunity to experience something different without the burden of processes and practices that are going to weigh us down and hinder our ability to learn something and try and make it repeatable and then find a way to come back into the fold and blend in back into the PMO practices.
The big constraint that we had was related to the how we approach getting from start to finish was controlled and managed by the PMO, and an unwillingness of the folks that were in that group to try something different. So the key thing that we did was unhook them and just say, Ali, you get whatever you need in terms of the roles you need to deliver a successful end result and try something different. And so that's what we did. So.
Yeah, so at that point, Mark and I had some serious discussions in terms of where we wanted to bring this capability, and we could have chosen one of two paths, you know, go at it alone and figure out how to make this work and likely fail at the end because we didn't have the right tools, the right coaching and mentorship that we needed to evolve this and take it to the next level. But what we did is we contacted Microsoft at that time and leveraged them in terms of their network to line us up with somebody. Or initially we went to them asking them if they had the capability or they could bring in somebody from MCS or other to help us with this problem we had. We established a new team. We have this new shiny team sitting here waiting for something, but we don't have no real direction. We have no real identity as a team. What are we trying to solve? So what we did is bringing all these disciplines together, we had to change the way we worked. Change the way you work is difficult. So when you look at the disciplines, you bring in BAs, QAs, and developers, and there's always a healthy rivalry between the three disciplines. Not just that, is that there's a lot of distrust. And in our old practice where, you know, everything was waterfall, there was throwing it over the fence mentality. It was always, I did my job, it's here you go, you're next. So development requirements are done, hand it over to the next team and let them deal with the mess, right? And it was very, very difficult to get, you know, anything done at that point. And hence we had a very, very tough time delivering the value to our business, and we failed in a lot of times in our projects. So we were really fortunate that Microsoft got it right with us. They introduced us to a Canadian ALM leader. They go by ImagineNet. We have members of them in the room today, and it's very nice that, you know, that they're here because they're really part of our success. They helped coach and mentor us. We had the idea, we had the sense that we needed somebody to come and help us. We wanted to do it right, and we've picked the right partner to help us get there. So first step was to make sure we had, you know, established the right connections within the industry to help us move this capability forward, or the practice that we wanted to adopt forward. So we wanted to look across the team and perform a full assessment across the different dimensions that we think were important for us. And they're very basic at their core. It's people, processes, and tools. I didn't want somebody to come in and just tell me that the tool is going to solve my problem when I had fundamental problems on the back end with just everyday people problems. Do we have the right skill? Do they have the right training? Are they fit for this role that we're asking them to be participate, to be a team member on? What we wanted to do as well is ensure that the process that we have, although we had processes in the past, those processes hindered us in the past, and it'd be very cumbersome to navigate. There was always a compliance requirement or a document or something that always weighed on top of us that we had to complete. It was never about how do we solve the business problem, how do we focus on what that problem is, and then let those things happen the way they need to as they need to, and not as number one thing is the compliance and you have all your documentation, your sign-offs and everything done prior to even understanding really the business problem and what you're set out to solve.
Pick it up.
Okay, so we engaged the partner. He helped. I guess from my experience, the individual that we had was by far somebody superior that we've ever individual superior to what we've experienced in the past in terms of the process, the practice, and the approach that they delivered the assessment against. So it was independent assessment. Came in and they looked across the different dimensions that I spoke about earlier, and with the intention of really identifying what our problem areas are and helping us develop a roadmap to solve that problem over a period of time. So we knew this wasn't a quick fix. We knew it wasn't going to happen overnight. We knew it was going to take a lot of work and grit to get us to the capability, desired capability we were looking for. So out of that roadmap, after that roadmap was delivered, we looked across implementing some of the suggestions and recommendations out of that roadmap. I would own that roadmap as the solutions delivery manager, and from there I was committed to making sure that everything we did moving forward aligned to what we had in that roadmap. What came out of that was the adoption of Scrum and Kanban practices. Scrum was introduced to the team, and we were versed in the theory, and then we took the exam and we all failed. So it's not a 10-page document that you read and you say, here you go, the scrum.org, you read it, you think you can take the test, is only 10 pages, 15 pages, it's a little bit harder than that. We didn't have the practical, you can read something, but until you actually apply that knowledge of what you learned against a problem, you really can't put a lot of the context in play in the right place. So we had an 80% failure on that on our team, where we did commit to passing that, and in subsequent attempts we did. We had also adopted Kanban as a visual representation of the flow of work through our pipeline. It allowed us to introduce limits of work in progress and whatnot. So we had a good idea of what we were looking at as a team and what we were moving through the pipeline. And the team was responsible to make sure that remains clean in terms of the flow. We also opted to look at other options that the partner provided, and those are TFS quick starts. Where previously we were on Team Foundation Server 2008, and all it did for us is really it serves a purpose of source control. We replaced our old VSS, Virtual Source Safe Control mechanism or tool, with TFS, and we weren't really leveraging the capabilities of the product beyond that. So no work item tracking, no reporting. We weren't leveraging the full capabilities, but we had it in place, and for the purpose it served, it did what we needed to do, but we wanted to take it beyond that. So we like I said, we focus on the people, processes, and tools. I think we got that out of our first couple of engagements with our partner. And the next step was to really demonstrate our understanding of your practice, exactly. So what we did is we practiced on, we had an existing product that was under development at that time, and we struggled to get this thing out of the door. We had a project sponsor that nobody wanted, but it had to be perfect before we rolled it out because of the visibility of the tool. And this was our corporate directory. At that point, with that product, it's our people finder. We wanted to get this out to our organization. The organization wasn't asking for this, but as an IT project, we took this on, saying we want to improve the user experience and consolidate our objective of consolidating all of our corporate people finder applications under one banner. So, by doing that, what we had to do is get the commitment from our sponsor, who was Mark at that time, to allow us to deliver something to our employees. It wasn't about making it perfect, it was about getting it out there and allowing the feedback mechanism to start working. So we worked hard as a team to practice the new learnings through the methodologies, the tool set. We gave us opportunity to get the hands-on to get this from, I'm not gonna say this wasn't a new project, so it was difficult to get these individuals, get the individuals to buy in to say we're gonna deliver something that was half-baked to a partially baked and ready to go solution. So we got that out there as a win for the team through the guidance of the LM partner at that time. From ImagineIt and the subsequent follow-ups of the team and the feedback mechanism that we created through this product to allow our backlog to grow against this product and deliver more value sooner to our business through the incremental sprints that we adopted. So we started on 4-week sprints at that time because we wanted to commit to learning the process. It wasn't about rushing through and getting things done quick. It was about understanding the capability, the new capability, the new tools, and trying to do it right and setting realistic targets. So as an sample of the application, this is what was launched or similar to what was launched to our users. It was a new way of finding employees at Finning. It consolidated multiple corporate directories. We had many entities, Finning International, Finning Canada, the Cat Rental Store. This brought them all under one umbrella. Ultimately, this evolved to what we have today in terms of a complete product feature set for people finding, and then a backlog, a mile deep for enhancements and features that the business would like to see within this product. So we did shift at that point from project to product development. Next one, tails of that, we completed our expense claim application. Prior to our go live, we had a problem where we had expense claim forms, simple thing with many organizations have, but we were just on the heels of delivering our ERP solution, and our old solution wouldn't satisfy the needs or had to be modified significantly to realize a product ready for our post ERP. We didn't have the tools at that time, InfoPath or whatnot, so we chose to develop under develop it as a web application, and we got this through to completion, implementing the practices that were adopted and staying true to the principles of Agile, Scrum, and Kanban. Okay, so we're ready to go live with our ERP. It was a milestone at Finning to get over that finish line, and the opportunity to demonstrate our capabilities were open for everyone. So we went from practicing to we're ready to go. We're open for business, and allow the demand to come in. So the demand wasn't managed by our formal demand process. That was managed internally by individuals like Mark in terms of setting direction and priorities of execution. And with that, we were able to demonstrate that repeated success from one request to another, solving business problems when they came up in real time.
So really kind of follow that crawl, walk, run approach from practice backstage where nobody's, you know, got pressures for you on timelines to allow the team to work out all of the bugs internally, all the impediments that were really within the team. And then the ERP go live and the challenges that came after served as an opportunity to step it up a notch. And what we saw was a shift in the source of the impediments. More of what was being encountered by the team was coming now from outside of the team. The people didn't know what they wanted, and they didn't know how to answer the questions that the team was looking for when requirements were being gathered and so on. So it really bolstered the confidence in the team because they saw that they're operating now and being successful and the challenges are elsewhere. So it gave us something else to focus on in that evolution. And as Ali talked about, just the prioritization between competing needs started to get reintroduced. And again, we kept that away from our PMO and our normal demand process so that we could organically evolve how we would manage demand across different products that were being developed in succession. So.
Okay, so with that, we were able to deliver the value, and through that, we would demonstrate that through the products we delivered. This was the first one out of the gates for demand. Is we were able to deliver this solution in 2 weeks, actually, record time for us. But in terms of what we delivered in 2 weeks was a usable first iteration. So they were able to use the product. In the past, they wanted everything. They wanted the reporting capabilities and everything. What we did is we gave them the first piece, which they needed was the input forms to build up the data that they needed, and then we followed through with the next sprint with the reporting that they desired. So it was delivered in iterations. It was never a big bang, all or nothing, and the approach really worked for the team. It satisfied the business needs, and the interest started to grow in that circle. So the business saw that this was a capability, this is a response time that they'd never seen from IT, and it started to build the confidence back in the group. What prior comments we had is that business had lost confidence in our ability to deliver, and we had to change that, and it wasn't going to be an easy task. It was one customer at a time, getting their buy-in, getting their support for the in terms of the process that we've adopted and their participation. So we're no longer there as order takers, we're there as partners in making sure that we can deliver this value to them.
The business problem that was emerging when we went live with our ERP was the number of processes that now relied on master data to be set up in advance of a transaction being conducted. So in this particular example, there was data that needed to be set up before we could open a work order, and the team and the process and the system we had implemented to be prepared for that for go live, we totally underestimated. So this one needed a quick turnaround, and the team delivered that, and it translated into, I think here's a couple more examples, just kind of flash through them. For other types of work that wasn't covered under the ERP, that was now exposed and needed a solution to. So that's where we saw the consistency and the repeatability of what we had implemented with the team.
Okay, so not only now is the business like what we're doing, the executives, we've caught the executives' attention. So we have this now new capability. They're seeing progress. They're saying, why can't I get that? Why can't we throw them on that problem? So with that came the constraint that we only have a certain capacity on the team to deliver that that capability. And the question was put back to them is, if this is important, how do we move forward in realizing that for you? And that was a decision at that point was to double the team. With doubling the team at that point, we go through the same stages of team formation where, you know, you're putting a bunch of individuals together, you're not going to expect them to hit the ground running and be all on the same page and ready to execute. So we engaged the RLM partner again and performed a refresher. As we introduced new individuals to the team, we we absorbed them into existing Scrum team. But what we had to do at that point was get them to understand why we were doing and what we were doing before trying to create another Scrum team. And with that, we wanted to make sure that they got the right exposure to the theory behind it and not just the practical. And we brought Imagine-It in to help conduct that. And we did at that point was with a larger team. The interest grew beyond just the developers. We brought in individuals from our business applications team that support our DBA group, our a couple members from our project management group as a visibility point of view. They may not practice it, but they now are interested in how we're delivering and the impact. And what we wanted to do is highlight to them what it really takes to deliver this, and the impediments that we experience on a day-to-day basis are a result of some of the process or misalignment in processes between what we do internally for development and how we interact with other teams to get to realize the delivery.
That refresher training offered a great opportunity under disguise to have a level set of how we were progressing against that original roadmap that was identified. And we drew out what were the things that were impeding us from truly getting all the way to where we wanted to be by having that independent opinion come and look at the team. So that was probably a significant learning in how to move it to the next level is do that extra step again.
So as Mark mentioned earlier, is that the demand, we managed that separate, but that demand became unmanageable for us in terms of how we just approached it prior at Hockley. Is we used judgment at that point, where now we had to show a plan. What are we really going to do? How are we going to execute against that plan? And where is this demand? And how are we going to prioritize it? We have backlogs for every product, but what's most important for us? And there are competing priorities. And how do we make sure that we're working on the right thing with and using the capabilities and the team that we have to realize that? So I'm just going to kind of flip through some other things that we were developed. So the impact here is that we were delivering. It was something that was foreign to this team. We would deliver maybe one or two products a year in the past, and we're delivering, eight applications in 10 months. And when you look at that, it's like it takes a lot of effort, a lot of commitment from a team, and aligned processes and practices to do it. I'm not saying that the Scrum teams were perfect. We're running smoothly internally. What we did have was committed team members that were focused on the objective. They were committed to the process, and committing to making sure things were improved over. And it wasn't going to happen overnight. It's a journey, right? It wasn't a sprint. It was a marathon that we're running here. So, what this did here for us is it gave us the opportunity to continue to demonstrate our capabilities and build the interest in our organization and the curiosity in what we're doing and how we can deliver more value to them. We have pockets that adore this team, and they run in and they help wherever they can. We have change agents in place that are advocating for this team, for what we put in place, and are representing our team to our customers in a way that pulls them in and versus isolating them or alienating them from the process. It's about working in partnership and unison with the business to achieve those objectives. Another application, and this one came on the heels of our ERP as well, as a gap that was presented where our sales force can't really reserve a piece of equipment outside of navigating a very cumbersome process within our ERP. It wasn't usable for them as a sales force, and it wasn't the right solution. So it was deemed as a workaround to the problem within the ERP. We had a better idea. We wanted to show them visibility of our equipment, our inventory, in one screen, a usable screen, and allow them to navigate to where they need to be. To as a sales force that isn't technically savvy, that doesn't necessarily need to use an ERP, but needs to be able to access information quickly and easily. So this application tracks the equipment from customer order to once it's landed to preparation in our prep facilities and ultimately delivery to a customer. So it gives that sales rep an end-to-end view of where that piece of equipment is in the delivery pipeline up until it gets handed over to the customer. On the heels of that application, we leveraged a lot of the capabilities that were there. It was all about inventory, and we developed an external facing site that presents the inventory we have for used parts and attachments. So we were able to respond quick as well on this, and the priority on this was high at that time, and we didn't fail. So there's a theme here is that we're able to deliver on the commitments we made. We had plans, we drew them out, and at times we exceeded, or at times we were able to look at a problem and say, do you really need that? And if you do need that, what else has to come off? So the understanding is that it was about delivering and not about holding the process up. It was not about, when you're done, you're never gonna talk to me again. I wanna get as much as I can, into you now as part of my requirements. It was about building that trust that we're gonna come here, we're invested in making sure that this evolves with you and build that relationship and that trust back in that process. So I'm gonna hand it back over to Mark and explain a little bit about where we're going with this new capability.
So the back half of 2012, we started to look at where else we could apply Agile, either full-blown attempt to replicate what the success that we had on the web development side, or just take concepts and apply them in specific areas. And some of it just happened naturally. Groups that had been exposed to Agile through the refresher training that they tagged on to, as well as some of the conversation and observations that they had with the solutions delivery team, they just picked that up and said, hey, we should do that in our area for this problem. So you see a lot of the concepts applied, although we're not necessarily all doing software development.
Kanban boards everywhere in our organization.
Yeah. So the one area that we're working on in the back half of the year and continuing to is on our business intelligence and reporting capabilities. And then we have pretty aggressive plans in 2013 to move forward on mobile application development. So we look to be applying it there with the same resources that were involved in the web development, but now just expanding the technology toolkit. This is a screenshot of a report portal that the web team developed in conjunction with the BI team. Flip through that one. This is a screenshot of an application that was actually developed prior to us implementing Agile, but that we've enhanced and will continue to evolve in the future, kind of focused on the safety as a core value theme for Finning. This one is tracking incidents, health and safety incidents in our organization and all the statistic reporting around that. And this is just a screenshot of a concept iPad app that one of the developers put together to show and demonstrate what we could do by layering on top of other applications that we'd already developed. And Ali showed you the machine availability one a little bit earlier.
Yeah, and these aren't mock-ups, they're all fully functioning applications.
We have our finning.ca site being refreshed and I think going live in the next couple of weeks. That's something that you'll all be able to see. Come back to the PPM linkage. So we had unhooked the team, the solutions delivery team, and what they were doing from our traditional PMO and demand process to give it a chance to more organically evolve without the skepticism, the constraints that were being imposed initially by my PMO. And my goal for where we want to be is to have the right level of governance over all the type of work that's being in IT or that's being conducted in IT, regardless of the approach. So we've peeled back what was baked in as specific and required and mandatory across the board to be much lighter weight and stick more to how decisions are made around what gets worked on with what priority and then how the status reporting all aggregates between our waterfall projects, between our agile projects and so on. We've implemented Project Server at Finning, and it started out with just workflows to support our waterfall, but now they're implementing an additional workflow to support where we want to have hooks in from the Agile team, and then looking to integrate that even further with TFS over the long term. And then one thing that we've evolved to and is really important is coming up a level, because we're not just working on one product backlog. We're working on many products. Ellie's, you know, spoken about a number of applications that we've developed in the last couple of years, and the list continues to grow. We continue to move ahead in evolving those applications further, but we start new ones. So we need to be very disciplined around taking those same principles we apply within a single sprint and bringing it to that macro planning level. So what the team will go through is understanding at a high level what's required out of a set of applications, and provide me with a 3-month view of what we're committing to delivering. So this is you probably can't see any of the text on it, but it's a timeline. It's a Gantt chart, simple Gantt chart, and each left hand down the left hand side is a release of a product that we intend to deliver. The blue section of each bar is the amount of time that's being allocated for the development sprints by the solutions delivery team, and the green is the forecasted testing time. So it gives a picture of what we're committing to from an IT standpoint to get the application developed and tested through our cycles, and then how much time we think the business is going to need with it before we'll be able to release it into production. And this goes over really well with our executive, because they can see that we've got an overall plan of what we intend to deliver over a larger cycle, but still allows the team to stick to all of the principles related to Scrum within a given sprint or product development cycle. As we go forward, we want to get better and continue to grow our use of it. We're looking at other alternatives on how we can expand our capacity intelligently to meet peak demand, so keep a number of employees on staff who can manage what the average demand should be over time, but at periods of increased activity, spin up an additional Scrum team who works within the same principles that we've established. And so the Imaginet was somebody that we've already talked to about doing that, given that they helped us create what we have today. We're looking at expanding the use of TFS beyond what we use it today for, so further configuring the templates to better tailor it to specifically how we work and introducing other third-party add-ons. And then from how we apply the capability in our organization, we've been really successful at developing it and getting it in place and having it reliable and consistent. Now I'm comfortable to go out and speak with our executive on a more strategic type of conversation around how should we leverage that? Do we want to leverage it for the types of applications that we've shown you that are, you know, giving productivity gains, or do we want to actually target solutions that better position us with our customers and offer a competitive advantage against our competitors? So looks like we're right at the end of the session. Quick wrap up. The first thing is, and these are our lessons learned. First is laying the right foundation. People, process, tools, Ali talked a lot about that. Find the right partner to support your journey. For us, it was Imaginet, and they offered a lot of great advice in coming in, assessing our situation, helping us to deliver a roadmap, and then providing us with follow-up engagements to help us progress up the maturity curve. Identify your change agents. For us, there was a couple of key individuals who right from the beginning believed in Agile that were working within the team to move that forward. And that's a pretty straightforward one, but it was really critical to our success. give your team the right environment so that they can gain the traction and build up their confidence without any constraints being imposed on them, and allow them to build the momentum progressively. You're not going to get there to, you know, fully functioning at your optimized state immediately. It is a journey, and that's what we've kind of shown you today was our experience. Big recommendation from me for those of you who are wondering, how do we contend with the differences in philosophy between the more traditional waterfall approach individuals to those who are looking to do something with Agile, is separate them for the time being and insulate them, give them a chance to grow and demonstrate how to add value in a different way than your organization might be traditionally used to. And then over time, figure out how do you get them back together, and emphasizing the benefits of what Agile provides and why you want to go there in the first place, and why you went there. For us, shifting the mindset with the business that we were working with from that all or nothing to incremental and evolutionary was key. That was a big impediment to going Agile, and there's still something that we need to educate our business partners with on a regular basis, that saying we don't say no, we say not now when we throw it in the backlog, and that has completely changed the relationship between our IT organization and the business, because they feel heard and they get to participate in a process that allows them to change their mind. Staying committed to delivery is one of the things that we've upheld throughout all of this as a dominant principle. So there's always going to be challenges, there's going to be impediments that you're going to face, but if the team stays accountable to that delivery of that solution and attacks their impediments and gets support for their impediments so that they can be still delivering as opposed to falling victim to circumstance, you're going to see this progress and progress quickly. So that's the end. Thank you for your time. If I don't know, Keith, if we have time for questions, if we do, we're happy to take them. If not, and you want to follow up with us either right now or later, we can talk in the hall or give you a card. No Keith? I don't see Keith here, so let's take a question.
And actually, I've got a mic here. I can run it if you want to raise your hand.
Right down in the front.
Oh, boy. Like a horse. Yeah, don't fall.
No, don't do that. Okay. Thank you. Well, who is acting as the product owner in your organization, and how could this person deal with the several dealerships you were working with?
So we have one dealership, which is Finning Canada, that we're responsible for. So we don't cross the different territories or regions. Today we have a surrogate sponsor or product owner, and we enable or entrust the business analyst to act and work with that business to actually accurately capture the business need and be a very close, have a very close partnership and relationship with them. This isn't us sending somebody to capture some notes and come back to the team. It's somebody that's really there to understand the business problem and work with them to and translate their needs into the backlog that we have, and obviously plan that work and move it forward.
Yeah. So on the ERP side, that is an area where we're attempting to have consistent systems and processes across business units. In that case, we have a role in our parent company whose job is to facilitate the feedback between the division process owners and consolidate and prioritize that with them to feed what we're doing in terms of priorities. So.
Okay. Just one more question.
Okay.
Okay. About maintenance, was it also part of the teams, or was it a separate team working on maintenance?
Yeah, each team, actually we have two scrum teams, and within the teams they look at the backlog and then look at the priorities of what's there from a maintenance perspective. The maintenance aspects are part of the scrum team's planning. work. So they pull in work to enhance or change something as it relates to the priority. So if it's a bug in our system or there's an emergency, that gets fast tracked. It has to get handled, and team needs to recover somehow by pulling something off or pulling a rabbit out of a hat to get make sure that they deliver on their commitment. The concern here isn't about if there's a flood of unplanned work, then there's a concern for us. So we were able to manage where we shifted from a 1 month sprint, 4 week sprint to a 2 week sprint. That enabled us to be a little bit more responsive to our business and their needs in terms of maintenance and enhancing certain aspects of their applications. With a 1 month sprint, it was very difficult for us to go back to them and say, well, we have three more weeks to the end of our sprint, can we talk to you then? Whereas opposed to in a 2 week sprint, we were able to go back to them and say, we have a week before our sprint ends and we're gonna have a plan, we can pull this in as planned work and keep the team on track to delivering against their current priorities.
There's another area where we've had to contend with that challenge of unplanned work, and that's when we're looking at I showed you that 3 month plan, the stuff that gets thawed up inside of that 3 month plan. So the way we've handled that is reserved a percentage of the capacity in that plan, about 20%, to deal with what comes up unplanned. And then we can always shuffle around those priorities, but we make it very clear in our communication that if you want this to happen, our overall plan is going to have to change.
Thank you, Mark and Ali.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith.